Once you get into your mid-60s, it's supposed to be the golden years of life. Posted up in a retirement home, making new friends, drinking diabetic-friendly shakes, hanging out with people, playing bingo, getting tucked in by the nurses. It's supposed to be a time of relaxation. Retirement homes are supposed to be like sanctuaries. They allow the residents to find peace, new hobbies, new friends, and sometimes even new love interests. In fact, people find love in retirement homes quite often. There's also something really beautiful about falling in love again late in life. Movies and TV condition us to think that there's one big love out there, one true love, and once we lose it, it's all over. We'll never ever find that again. But when older people are able to find love in later life or in retirement homes, it just goes to show how big the capacity for love the human heart has. It can be really emotional. You know, feeling like you're able to fully and truly love all over again. And it also combats that fear of loneliness if you're no longer with your spouse. And look, I know, you're like, Bose, I thought this was sinister. Why are we talking about love in retirement homes? Well, because love always has a honeymoon stage. But when that honeymoon phase ends, everything starts to come out. Another thing that's really interesting about finding love so late in life is when somebody is 70 or 80 years old, you don't know how dark their past is. They have a lot of past. You don't know how angry, spiteful, or unhinged they really are. And unfortunately, Lena Driscoll's boyfriend is about to find out just how delusional she is. This case has been burned into my brain for over 10 years. I still can't believe it. Like, anytime somebody that's elderly murders someone, it always boggles my brain because I'm like, did they always have it in them? Did they, like, what? I have dug so deep to understand what happened in this case and why. And I think I have not only an interesting story to tell you, but some very interesting pieces of the puzzle that we were able to put together by looking at old newspapers and the census. Lena Mae Driscoll was born in 1927 in Georgia. Her husband was about 6 years older than her, and his name was Louis J. Driscoll. So they're born in the early 1920s, and look, they lived kind of not extraordinary lives. Lena was actually pregnant and had her son, her only son, when she was 15 years old. And it was Louis's baby. But they, you know, did the right thing to do in the 40s and 50s. They got married and they stayed together to raise their son. Now, Lena would kind of in and out have housekeeping jobs. This wasn't something she was overly passionate about. It was just kind of like a job. And her husband was a machine worker at a publishing house, so most likely like a newspaper or a magazine, something of that nature. But that was his trade. So Louis always had pretty consistent work. And Lena, in the early years, from like, you know, the 40s to the 50s or 60s, she was just kind of like cleaning houses and staying home sometimes, you know, being with her son. And they were just trying to make it. Like I said, it wasn't extraordinary. They didn't have massive ambitions. And if they did, they really didn't know how to attain them. So they lived their lives day in and day out, just working and taking care of their son. After a while of Louis trying to support the family as a whole, Lena eventually went and became a nursing assistant. She was certified. She did that for maybe roughly a decade or so, but she would eventually retire from that position. So she worked that right up until she could get out and retire. Lena, she kind of just liked to keep to herself. She didn't have like a lot of family that she stayed in touch with. She really didn't have any friends. It was just her, Louis, and their son. Now, their son, Eddie, according to the census, he got out pretty much as soon as he could. He got out of the house. He didn't want to stay with his parents. So it was just Lena and Louis for many, many, many years. Their relationship wasn't the healthiest because when you're kind of just codependent, sitting with your partner day in and day out, it's gonna go one of two ways. Either you guys love each other to hell and back and you're best friends and you love being together constantly, or you're kind of like bickering and just dealing with each other, but you don't want to leave because it's so, so comfortable. And that's kind of how Lena and her husband were. Now, even though they didn't have a lot of money, they didn't have big dreams and goals and travel the world together or have more kids or anything like that. I mean, they had a kid when Lena was 15 and they said, no more. We're just gonna live our life like this. They spent all of their time together. So even if it wasn't the most picture-perfect, healthy relationship, there was two things about this relationship. It was consistent and it was loyal. Lena and Lewis were incredibly loyal to each other. Doesn't matter if they were bickering. Doesn't matter if they didn't talk to a lot of family or friends. They always had each other. And this was the life that Lena was familiar with since she was a teenager. It was just her and Lewis. And she loved him. She loved him so, so, so dearly. And he loved her. Now, this is important because in 1975, when Lena was 54 years old, Lewis passed away. Grief is serious when it comes to the loss of a spouse. On one hand, if it's abrupt and you lose the most important, most consistent person in your life out of nowhere, it can be impossible to process. Quite frankly, it is impossible to process. Grief is a monster. But also, you know, if you see your significant other pass away slowly, you know, as a spouse, you generally feel like you have to be strong for them through it all. And then once they're gone, it's devastating. It's empty. It's confusing. And that's exactly what happened to Lena. After over 30 years of being with this man and knowing nothing but being by his side, he was gone and she was alone. This is also part of the reason why Lena, who wasn't too consistent with work before, just kind of fully dove into being the medical assistant. It gave her something to do. It gave her some normalcy. It gave her the 9-to-5. It gave her a community that she would go to. And she was very socially awkward. Very, very socially awkward. Didn't really know anybody, but it gave her consistency. But when Lena would go home, back to the house that she lived in with her husband for many years, it was quiet. It was dark. And it was lonely. The only person she really spoke to was her son, Eddie. Now, Lena never had any therapy for the loss of her husband. I mean, nobody could get therapy in the 70s or 80s. In fact, it was kind of frowned upon. People thought that if you were getting help for something, that something must be wrong with you. But in reality, I'm personally of the opinion that grief is something that we absolutely cannot walk through alone, especially when it's a spouse or somebody that you've known for a long time. And then in 1992, Lena was dealt another blow of grief that was unfathomable. Her son, Eddie, also died at the age of 50. No parent ever wants to have to go to their child's funeral. At this point in 1992, Lena Driscoll was completely alone. And when you're alone for this long and you don't have anybody to lean on, you can sometimes start to deal with grief in kind of strange ways. It can manifest differently for everybody. Lena kind of lost her grip on reality, but she kept that to herself. It was very private. A decade after Eddie passed away, Lena was retired and living on her own was really kind of a lot. She didn't need a whole lot of assistance, but she couldn't be in the house by herself anymore. So she moved to a place called Hightower Manor Complex. It was on Martin Luther King Drive in Atlanta. She moved there in the early 2000s. Adjusting to the retirement home was a little bit confusing for her. She was now around people 24/7 and there were all these activities, but she just wasn't super well socialized. You know, she'd been alone for a very long time. And because of that, she was very secretive. She was very, very private and she didn't talk that much. I mean, sure, she could interact, but Lena wasn't the type of person to make the first move.
It's very difficult, almost impossible, to just grow social skills once you get to a certain age. I have terrible social anxiety, and I'm in my 30s, and I don't even know where to start. So imagine Lena being in her 70s and not really knowing how to talk to people and not really being familiar with being able to interact with this many people freely. But there was one thing that she was very familiar with, and that was being in the company of a man. So when Herman Winslow Sr. walked up to her, Herman was very charismatic. She was completely starry-eyed. Herman had no problem introducing himself, talking to Lena, talking to other people around the community. He was very, very, very sociable. And sometimes when we see traits that we don't have ourselves, we're just so magnetically attracted to this person. And also, look, Herman was giving her attention. He was cute. And she missed that. She missed having a partner. She missed being with somebody that loved her. It was a feeling that she missed, and it was a feeling that she was willing to open up a little bit socially for. So when Herman starts putting the moves on Lena, she is so responsive. The other thing is, Herman was very persistent with Lena. I think he probably would have liked that she was a little shy and he was kind of in control of the situation, and he could just, you know, say a few things about how she looked, like, you know, walking out, "Hey, pretty lady," and she would just melt. She would just melt to the floor. And I get it. I get it. Sometimes when somebody's partner dies, it can feel like a betrayal to be with somebody else again. It can be very, very difficult, and they might want to stay loyal to their previous partner that has passed away. But she had been alone for so long, and Herman was nice. He was sweet, and she was ready for love again. Herman was married to a woman named Beulah Winslow, and Herman and Beulah had 11 children. In their time together, they had 5 sons and 6 daughters. They were busy. Now, and also remember, these people were born in like the 1920s and the 1930s, so it was common to have a lot of children. But I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty surprised when I read that. Herman himself was a widow because Beulah actually passed away in 2003. They lived together at the retirement home. When they retired together, and they had their little room. The rooms in this complex were just a one bedroom, one bath configuration. So that's where Herman and Beulah were for quite a bit. But she passed in 2003. And unlike Lena, who waited almost 30 years to find love again, Herman was ready just a year later. In fact, it was kind of well known around the retirement home that he was a flirt. He had a few ladies around the retirement home that he did not hesitate to say hello to every morning, even just a few months after Beulah's passing. But he and Lena got together in late 2004. So at this point, Lena and Herman are together in the retirement home. They are a full-blown couple. You know, I'm just picturing them playing bingo together, going out into the garden together. There was something sweet about this time because Lena was in love again, and she wasn't alone anymore. And Herman was very, very sweet to her. Even though you might think he was kind of a playboy around the retirement home, he really did love Lena. They even shared a bank account together. Lena's granddaughter would later talk about the relationship and say she was just so happy. She would show them photos of them together. She would talk about everything she loved about him. She said that they were probably going to get married. Now, this didn't come from Herman's mouth, but the way that she was talking about it, Lena's granddaughter assumed like, oh yeah, let's just prepare for grandma to be married again. And they were happy. She deserved it. She hadn't seen her like this before. During the first year of their relationship, they talked about traveling a lot together. And that's why they had the bank account. The bank account was originally kind of their travel fund together so they could go somewhere. And in the summer of 2005, they finally took a trip together to Daytona Beach. Once again, this was a really sweet time because when you're in your 70s, you don't expect to fall in love again. And you also don't expect to start traveling the world, or at least the country, with your new partner. Like, sure, they were in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were just going south to Florida, but for them, this meant sunny beaches, the relaxing in a chair, just soaking up the sun, hearing the sounds of the water. It was just a few days for them to visit Daytona, but Lena was really, really excited about it, and Herman was too. But this trip was not as peaceful as they intended it to be. Something happened on the trip. Something that just completely turned Herman off. Lena started to suspect that he was talking to other women in the retirement home. And not just him, you know, getting up in the morning and saying, you know, hi to Shirley when he went to get his orange juice. She thought that Herman was like seeing multiple other women in the retirement home. Also, I hate to break this to you, but I have to tell you, people in retirement homes are very sexually active. So if you thought that Lena and Herman were just like sharing like scoops of sugar-free ice cream to each other, no, they weren't. They were hooking up. And Lena thought that Herman was hooking up with other girls in the retirement home. So Herman had actually given her the key to his apartment prior to this because he was like, look, baby, you can come in whenever you want. I'm not cheating on you. I love you and I want to be with you. But Lena just wasn't buying it. And when they were on this trip in Daytona Beach, she really started to push the issue. Now, this is strange because they're not even in the retirement home. Nothing has happened. It's not like she walked downstairs and Herman was flirting with somebody there. She just kind of concocted this and started pushing the issue while they were on vacation. These two did not have cell phones. These two were not on Instagram. They were not on Facebook. She didn't see him liking any photos or anything. She just kind of came up with this idea. And usually when that happens, it's bred from insecurity, feeling like there's no way you like me. There's no way. There's no way that I'm good enough. Especially when our partner starts to seem too good to be true, to us at least, we start to get confused. Like, I can't be the only one. There's got to be more. I'm not good enough for you to commit to me. And it can come from a deep-rooted insecurity. I know this because I grapple with self-esteem. It was quite bad in my 20s. I still ask my boyfriend all the time, do you even like me? Okay. If you hate yourself, there is no way you're going to believe that someone else can love you. You will force them to prove their love for you at every single pang of insecurity. And it could come from anywhere. Lena and Herman could have been at a nice restaurant on the beach and the waitress could have been young and pretty and he could have flashed a smile at her and she would have just tanked, okay? She would have tanked. Now, here's the part of Lena Driscoll that is probably fairly relatable to some people. Now, we don't know exactly what happened, but he would later talk about this with his family. And apparently, Lena was relentless. She had decided that he was cheating on her, he didn't like her, that he was just faking all of it, and she wouldn't let it go. I mean, to the point that it actually scared him, and when he got back from Daytona, he broke up with her. Now, this is where things kind of start to shift. Now, like I said, that was the part where Lena was irrational, but honestly relatable to a lot of people. There's always the turning point in Sinister where somebody goes from a human that you might be able to understand and empathize to someone that's about to be cast out of society for their actions. I do think that based on Herman Winslow's background and what people said about him in the retirement home, that he was a little flirty. And maybe after Lena went pretty nuts on the Daytona trip, he very well might have said, screw this, I'm gonna go find somebody else in the retirement home. And honestly, that might hurt a lot to Lena, but it's well within his right. Also, if you think that somebody's cheating on you, then leave. You deserve somebody that is going to respect you and respect the relationship. And so if you really, really, really think that somebody's cheating, fighting for it is not the answer. Fighting for it is not in line with respecting yourself. The information that I'm about to give you comes from the prosecution at the court trial. I am going to use that to fill in some of the gaps. When Lena Driscoll and Herman Winslow returned from their trip on June 6th, 2005, she starts terrorizing this man. He had broken up with her and she couldn't take the rejection. That's what also makes me feel like this wasn't just all about cheating. This was about her, right? It was about feeling this insecurity, feeling this rejection, feeling this abandonment. And she just completely went off the deep end. She started following him around the retirement home and just arguing with him. Just messing with him at every turn. Sometimes when people do this, it can be trying to be like, prove I'm unlovable. Say it to me. Reject me. Reject me. Cause the pain to me that I think that I deserve. And that's exactly what she was doing. She also would show up unannounced in his apartment because she had the key. He was not safe anywhere in this retirement home. Now, the way that I've talked about Lena through this the whole time, I really do feel like some of you guys are gonna be like, whoa, I would never do that. But there's a couple of you right now that are scratching your brows saying, oh, I completely understand what she was doing. She couldn't handle it. And every rejection was escalating. Herman was terrified. He was not even safe in his own apartment. And he was afraid to take the key from her because he was scared of what she would do. I can't imagine if I sent my grandparent off to a retirement home to relax and, you know, spend the rest of his days there. And a year after grandma dies, now grandpa's getting terrorized by this random woman that's obsessed with him. Now, remember, he has several children and they cared about him. This is like a pretty scary situation because nobody knows this woman. So Lena starts to escalate to another one of the craziest pieces I think I have ever heard. So when following him around the retirement home and essentially breaking in late at night doesn't work, she starts to call Herman's phone and disguise her voice.
She would call him up and say, "Hi, this is Lily. I saw you downstairs at breakfast and you're looking mighty fine."
She would try to disguise her voice and he would say, "I know it's you. I know it's you. Lena, stop calling me. Like, please." Okay, this is the point where, do you know how absolutely delusional you have to be to think that you can call somebody you've been dating for a year and hide your voice, especially when you've been stalking them, and try to see if you can catch him flirting with another woman when he is now single? That's what she was doing. She's calling him. She's coming into his room. She's following him around the retirement home. He can't go anywhere. He can't do anything. So finally, he tells the security guards, "Hey, can you stand outside my room? Can you do something? She has a key. I don't want to take it back because I'm scared. And she's harassing me." And so the security guards at the retirement home take note of this. But they're not really here to defend the elderly people from other elderly people. And maybe there's a fight or two that breaks out between the older people, but they're here to prevent, you know, intruders or other issues, because this is supposed to be a safe space. They don't really take his concerns that seriously. Now, he made this complaint to the guards on June 9th. And on June 10th, he decides to do the only thing that he thinks he can do to stay safe, which is just staying in the public areas. But also, he was very, very social. So this is exactly where he wanted to be. Herman Winslow sat on the couch in the lobby at the Hightower Manor complex. There were several people around and a security guard. He figured he was safe. And he was relaxing and reading the newspaper. And then Lena comes downstairs. It's like she was getting ready for bed. It was later in the evening. So she had actually come down wearing a hairnet, her support stockings, a bathrobe, and slippers. She just, you know, marched downstairs in this nightwear and then just came up to him and started yelling at him. And he didn't really engage. He didn't say much back. The security guard stepped in. And he tries to calm down Lena. But I think it probably frustrated her that now there was this third party in between them. But she actually already had a plan. Because inside of her bathrobe, in the pocket, was an antique handgun that she had had since the 1950s. And I can't believe this. This is a witness statement. 76-year-old Lena Driscoll pushed the security guard aside and said out loud, "I got something for his ass," and walked up to Herman and shot him in the head 4 times in front of everybody. The other residents were almost unmoved. When the police came to the scene of the crime shortly after, Lena was still there in her bathrobe with her hairnet on and other senior citizens in the lobby, as well as the security guard. It's almost like the old people were almost unfazed by it all. Who knows what they had seen in their life, but the security guard was the one that was shook. He was saying everything to the cops. He was like, "This is crazy." But the other person that was talking pretty freely to the cops was Lena, because as soon as they showed up, she was still there with the gun in hand, and she said out loud, "I did it, and I do it again." I don't think that Lena enjoyed killing Herman. I think that she felt relief after that. So her saying that might have been a statement of, "I will do away with anything that is hurting me too much." Even though Lena was still holding the gun, her age had a big factor in this, because the police kind of put their guns away, even though she had hers out, and they convinced her to slowly put it down. They arrested her that night. The moment she was arrested, the press went absolutely wild. It was actually a pretty big case, because if you're anything like me, you can't imagine why somebody would kill someone when they're 70 or 80 years old. It just sounds crazy. But I think maybe now that you know all of the pieces that led up to this, maybe it makes a little more sense. But when they got to court, they had to prove without a reasonable doubt that this 79-year-old woman was dangerous and had to be off of the streets. The prosecution painted a portrait of a woman that was enraged by the rejection. She was upset that her only year-long romance from her partner was ending and that he may have found another companion at the retirement home. I mean, the prosecution laid out pretty much everything I told you, very matter-of-factly, but the defense team tried to say, "Listen, this was a crime of passion. Lena's not going to hurt anybody again. In fact, she'd had this gun since 1957, and she'd never hurt anybody. This antique gun was just for protection." Also, her granddaughter, once again, Lena Holt, who was actually named after her, this is kind of the only person that I saw that ever really spoke up for Lena Driscoll. She came out and she said, like, "I have no idea how this happened. I don't know why my grandma did this. I never saw any of the signs, but like, we are very, very sorry." The newspaper reports said that Lena Holt was very teary when she talked about everything that happened. It wasn't cold and, you know, "Please let my grandma out." She was upset. Once again, Lena's age played a really big role in all of this, and she was released on $25,000 bail and put on house arrest for murder. This enraged the family of Herman Winslow. A year later, at the full trial, Lena would actually take the stand, and it would show just how far gone she was. Now, her team actually tried to do a temporary insanity plea, which, if you followed true crime cases for a while, you probably know that's an incredibly difficult thing to prove. But once again, she's getting grace after grace for her age. I think this is really disappointing, because Herman Winslow has an entire family that's looking for some kind of justice. They trusted their grandpa. God, that makes me so upset. They trusted their grandpa to be safe at this retirement home. If anything, he might have had health issues, not be murdered. And here the retirement home has failed him after he asked security for help. And now the courts are letting this lady off easy just because she's old. So prosecution and defense are going back and forth like usual. And then eventually Lena takes the stand. Now, I don't know if this is what she was actually thinking, or if the defense was pushing it further to try to get this insanity plea. But Lena took the stand and said that she knew shooting him was wrong, that she shouldn't have done that. But she claims that she was driven to the point because Herman was, quote, dating multiple women, dozens of women. She claimed that multiple women were in and out of his room day and night. Now, we know this isn't true because over the couple of days that he was alive after the Daytona trip, she was just busting into his room whenever she wanted, and she never caught him with a lady. He was in bed, in his boxers. She also expressed this bitterness towards him because she claims that she had sworn off of dating and that he really pursued her. So she just had a lot of blame and malice for him, even though he was now dead. She also says on the stand that he was having dates by the hour, and she also believed that he was involved in a sex ring. She told the jurors that she finally just completely flipped a switch when they had come back and he stood her up for a barbecue date, and she claims that she can't remember anything after that. Everything just kind of went into a haze. The sex ring comment is absolutely insane. And the reason that I think her defense team set her up for it was because in their closing statements, they actually kind of tried to back this up by saying, no, Lena's delusion that her boyfriend was a geriatric gigolo, yes, they actually said that, is, you know, just wild. So you guys should let her go because she's delusional. That's why I think that they fed her that line. But do I think that to an extent it was based in reality that she really believed that he was seeing all these other women? Yes. And I think they just played into it and tried to really hype it up. The sex ring comment was just crazy. On the other hand, the prosecutors argued point blank period. Well, she just said on the stand that she knew what was wrong, so she cannot plead insanity. Pleading insanity basically implies that at the time of the murder that you did not know right from wrong. And in this scenario, we were here over a year later where she could have reflected, so it doesn't really count. Either way, they fought tooth and nail to try to convince the jurors not to confuse a jealous rage that was a little delusional with temporary insanity. Like, truly, it's so different. Some of y'all are delulu laying in bed at night. That does not excuse murder. Now, on June 3rd, 2006, just a year after the murders, the jury deliberated for 2 hours and they convicted her on all four counts: malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, and possession of a firearm. The judge sentenced her to life in prison plus 5 years. But as you know, that was not going to stop the defense from filing an appeal. 2 years later, her conviction was overturned and she was granted a new trial. Her new defense attorneys claimed that the previous ones just didn't do their job. This is the other part that I just hate, because for the victims' families, you think that you hear guilty. You think that you hear life in prison and it's over. But it's really not. For Lena to be, you know, getting new attorneys and trying new things and trying to get out 2 years later is just absolutely devastating. Horace Winslow Jr., who was Herman's son, actually later said, "I'd like to see her come out of there in a hearse." He claims that he didn't have any animosity towards her, but he was still mad that she had killed his dad and no justice was being served. His anger was completely valid, but then one of the worst hits came. Lena was retried and then convicted of voluntary manslaughter with time served. That means that for the crime committed in 2005, she would be released in 2015. Lena Driscoll's story is a reminder that jealousy is a powerful emotion, but it's also something that can be controlled if acknowledged. Lena didn't even try. She just let all of the jealousy, all of the insecurity, and all of the rage come to the surface. Lena Driscoll's release was scheduled for November 23rd, 2015. However, she was released 1 year earlier for medical reasons. She died February 12th, 2018 at the age of 90. She never returned to another retirement home.